So we're back with our Galatians series, talking about this letter, which we're saying is written for divided times. There's so much division going on in our world, and in the world of Galatians, there was so much division happening in their church context that we're wrestling with the ideas that this letter still speaks to us, even like a couple of thousand years later. And today, Bobby, it's great to have you with me as we talk about this letter together, right? And kind of thinking today with a little bit of kind of looking at Paul's pastoral kind of aspect, which involves Paul's sort of leadership that he's dealing with, right? There's a church, they've got a problem, and he wants to help lead them through it, right?
Yeah, it's an exciting part of the text. Well, Galatians in general is a great book. But what I kind of like about today is this is kind of like what we normally do in the office during the week, because there's something about when we pull together great theology and understanding what a text says, but how do we land that into our everyday living as pastors?
Yes.
And so today is a big part of that for us. There's a lot of leadership, a lot of stuff that Paul's leading us into.
And for me, it's like, in a weird way, there's a strange sense that I find myself so often thinking, I'm glad Paul, this great apostle who planted churches, I'm glad he didn't plant perfect churches. Because every single letter that Paul writes, it's because the church has other than maybe Philippians, but even there, there's still a little bit of something. But especially Galatians, all these churches had problems. So we have these incredible letters in the Bible because the churches had problems. So like, you know, what was causing Paul to tear his hair out and lots of grief has become our instruction.
Yeah.
Which maybe there's even a lesson in that, isn't there? That the difficult things we go through become learning points for us and instruction points for us. So I want to read just a passage that we're going to discuss today, you know, for you. So this is in Galatians chapter 1. It's verse 6 through to verse 9. And there's a couple of things we probably want to say briefly. I'm going to talk about this a little bit more in our next video that we do. But let's just say this is a kind of surprising part of the text. So ordinarily what you'd expect in a Greco-Roman letter is what we've dealt with for the last couple of weeks, some kind of warm welcome, some hellos. You know, it kind of generally what you would get is, hey, this is Paul, I'm writing a letter to you. And then you'd get, this is who I'm writing the letter to. And the same way as we do when we write an email, you know, you then have to do this kind of, I hope you're well, hope everything's okay, you know, how's the family, that sort of thing. Classically the case in Roman letters as well. But in Galatians, Paul gets through the, hey, I'm Paul and I'm writing to you guys, and where you'd expect to have now, and you see this in Corinthians and all these other letters, the kind of formalities and greetings, this is what you get instead. I'm astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. Not that there is another gospel, but there are some who are confusing you and want to pervert the gospel of Christ. Like really strong language, right? But if we or an angel from heaven should proclaim to you a gospel contrary to what we proclaim to you, let that one be accursed. As we've said before, so now I repeat, if anyone proclaims to you a gospel contrary to what you received, let that one be accursed. So where you expect to get, like, hey, how are you all doing? Instead, you get, like, really strong language. Like, just, you know, I want to just point out some of this language before we kind of move into our discussion. Language of deserting the gospel, turning to a different gospel. And then Paul's like, not that there is a different gospel. So you're essentially turning away from it. The language of perverting the gospel. Like, that's like, that language causes us to recoil a little bit when you hear, you know, such strong language. And then even going as far as to say that he's so confident that the gospel is central, that even if an angel was to come and say something contrary to the gospel, Paul's like, well, I would curse that angel for doing that. In fact, you could even curse me, he's saying, if I stopped preaching the gospel. So kind of, you know, huge text for us to think about here, Bobby, with some kind of really big chunks on it. And for me, what strikes me right at the start is firstly the shock of what I'm expecting to find here. I mean, instead of warmth and greetings, you know, I get this kind of very aggressive language and very strong, harsh language, which to me sort of speaks to the sense that the gospel is a big deal for Paul. Like, you're 9 verses into this letter, and Paul has said, I'm Paul, I'm writing to Galatians, and then the biggest chunk we've now got is him kind of screaming, I feel, him kind of screaming and shouting about the fact that they've gotten off track with the gospel, which tells me it's a big deal, and Paul doesn't seem to have time for formalities on that. Does that kind of resonate with you?
What I love about this part of the text, and again, as you always, find these angles and these parts that we could easily skip over just because there's other things we might want to get to that might sound better, be more enjoyable to talk about. But it's interesting that for years, especially growing up in church, for years, we have to understand what we're going to speak to and what we're not going to speak to. And when it comes to letter writing or emails, as you've alluded to, there's a challenge in that of how we're going to respond and what we're going to respond to. And today in our world, it becomes even that much more difficult to take time to say, is this actually worth it? When we think about ourselves as parents, or we think about ourselves as bosses in organizations, when is the time or what is the moment that we have to lean in and say, actually, we got to set this right now? And I think that's the part that we're looking in the letter that is quite alarming when we see someone go off script to what is the normal way of how he would address his leaders and leadership and of course followers. So it's a great part.
Yeah, and so this, for me as a reader, and then I think for us as pastors, I think for anybody engaging with our talk today, there's a reflection that's needed in terms of, like, what is Paul ultimately saying here, right? Mm-hmm. Why can he not wait? Why is it that this is so? Like, every commentary you pick up on Galatians, they talk about this. Like, this is strange. This is strange behavior at some level. It's not unheard of, but it tells us something about what Paul seems to think is highly important. So I kind of want to almost sort of frame it that for Paul, as he calls himself a minister of the gospel, calls himself a sort of commission to preach the gospel. I think what you're seeing here right at the start, and this for me is a huge piece for us as pastors, I think it's a huge piece for us as a church community, is essentially Paul saying you can't mess with the gospel. You and me have talked a lot about this over the years that we've worked together, about how do we keep that central thing the central thing and ensuring that it is the central thing. So Paul has this language in here, hasn't he? He's going, well, you can't mess with the gospel, but you can't also replace it with a different gospel. So there's two things need to go on. What do we actually think the gospel is? And we're going to talk about that more and more throughout this series of Galatians. Mm-hmm. But then also, you can't mess with it. You can't stretch with it. It's like you and I, we like working different recipes when we're cooking in the kitchen. And we always talk about this, that there's things you can mess with and there's things you kind of can't mess with.
Well, right? when I look at my own history growing up in a Pentecostal church and even a bit of an extreme version of that, when I went to school and had the privilege of different teachers, it was really quite challenging when there was areas that I was taught that were not biblically accurate.
Right, okay.
One of the gifts of you joining us, even long before you flew over and interview process and everything else, was this understanding of biblical knowledge and how to lean into that. And we've all been a part of different leanings that have either taken us down roads that were probably unhealthy or are repairing some of the pinch points that came with that. So I think in this, and for sure, I mean, like, I love cooking soups, especially this time of year.
Soup season.
Soup is just so amazing. But the reason why I like it is you can change it up pretty easy. You start with a base and you can move other parts in depending on the flavor and what you're tired of or want to change.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing soup with a pretty detailed recipe of measurement. It's a little bit more, taste it, add a little bit more. But there's other stuff.
Yeah,
and that you just can't mess. And you know, your daughter said something a couple of years ago that was priceless. It was around food as a young girl, and she was loving her mac and cheese, and you guys were putting different things in it to stretch the recipe. And she said, "Dad, it's mac and cheese. It's macaroni and cheese."
And
there's just no movement in that. And I think that what has become very healthy in our, especially maybe more than ever at a time like this. Is just saying there are things that we can have movement on that we would say there's, but there are other things. And we typically don't like the locked in portion, but it's becoming more valuable now than ever.
Yeah.
That this is something we just can't move on.
Yes.
And so Paul has said, hey, this is a big one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a huge
part. And I think you're right in terms of, you know, even what it is to be a church community in the 21st century. You know, so our forefathers, whether that's our recent forefathers, even if we go back, you know, a few hundred years, you know, whether you're listening to, you know, Christian, you know, theorists and philosophers or secular theorists and philosophers, the world's moving quickly. So we have to be able to navigate it. You know, the word we use throughout coronavirus is nimble, you know. So when you're living in a stage of having to be nimble, when things are changing, when worldviews and philosophies and theories are moving fast all the time, your core values become more important than ever, because it's more likely now than 50 years ago that the people you encounter in the street will think differently than you, will have different worldviews than you. Mm-hmm. What's ironic for me in terms of thinking about this as a Bible scholar is that's the world Paul lived in. Mm-hmm. You wander into a street in Ephesus or Galatia, it's not guaranteed you're going to agree with the people that you encounter on that street. Mm-hmm. So for Paul, you can't start church getting core values wrong. And for Paul, the gospel and all that the gospel implies, which is a lot for Paul, it has to be central. And I think that sense of the strength of that language. So, you know, in the same way as churches over the last sort of 40 or 50 years have become more and more streamlined and clear on legalities and these sort of things, there's also a call, I think, upon us to be clearer on those core issues, because we're going to have to navigate as Christians. And I'm not trying to, you know, tell this sorry, sad tale of what it's like to be a Christian in a secular world, but there's different worldviews and ideas, you know. So, like, let's say you go back 40 years ago, you know, 40 years ago, secularism was moving relatively heavily through the world, so it was quite likely you would encounter someone on the street who wouldn't share the same faith value as you, you know. Mm-hmm. That's not a new phenomena. But what you do notice, in particularly in, like, kind of, you know, Western Canada, let's just talk about where we live at the moment, you would probably, even if you might meet someone who didn't believe in the same God as you, ethically, morally, people were still quite similar. But as that's shifting and changing and adjusting, as was the same in Paul's world, I think what you see is this need to have these core values is right. Because if you don't get, what do we think the gospel means? What does the gospel call us to? What does it ask us to be? Then you're not going to be able to navigate these contexts. Yeah. Which then I think is why Paul uses a word like, you know, we were talking about this word when we were studying this text together. Like, the word pervert gets used in there, which is, like, really shocking. Yeah. Like, you know, it's one of those words you're like, can I even say that? Yeah. Like, that might not be appropriate to say in a church teaching or something like that. But Paul actually says that if we're not careful, we pervert the gospel. And, like, you found that quite a sort of challenging sort of thing to think about.
Well, yeah, especially because when we're always looking at the vision of where we're going, and we have past experiences that might shade a bit on that, and new creative, and again, I'm a highly creative person. So one of the ways you have incredibly helped me is when I get a huge creative idea. I mean, we were at a conference a couple years ago, and the speaker was in this whole new way of creativity with information of how he thought it could be done, and everybody was wowed by it, and I was completely pulled in, and we got in the car and you just shut it down, and I remember going, wow, and you said, it's amazing, it's not even close to the Bible, and I went, oh, but it was such a great idea. But again, I feel that there are things that we have to hold on to. Especially when we look at the past, we have a side, and we certainly want to, we certainly won't get into it today, but even in my own love and care for my history in Pentecostal, in the Pentecostal movement, there's some grave, disastrous parts that have been missed, that have just been missed. And as you've gone back and looked at history and kind of, you know, showed parts of that I didn't even see and I wasn't taught, it really changes your perspective of how we live.
Yes.
But you have to go back to those anchor points to say, we're just not going to move away from this.
Yes.
We got to stay back to say, Joe, if we're having mac and cheese, it's mac and cheese.
Yes.
And that's what we're serving. Otherwise, we're going to call it something else.
And
I think within this, it's a pretty big deal as the world continues to be lost, trying to find anchor points.
Yeah.
And as we're watching, even in recent comments, even from our agnostics, our atheists groups, that would say, maybe even for us, we've lost our way. That there's an element of saying, we've gone way so far the other way. Maybe there is a God.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a window of opportunity for the church to do something that has not been able to do in a very long time, certainly in my time of leadership.
Yes.
And so while we have an open door to grab onto something, to make sure that we can lean gospel into people that are open like never before, we got to make sure we have it right.
Yes.
We have to make sure that we are clear in where we're taking this, like Paul would want us to
do. I mean, I want to run with the analogies that we've been using because, you know, I steal recipes from you all the time and you steal, I'm trying to convince you to steal my chili recipes, right? But I remember speaking to a chef some years ago about Italian food and Italian restaurants. And I said, when you go to an Italian restaurant, what do you order? He said, if I go for the first time, he says, I order spaghetti bolognese, right? I was like, really? He said, yeah. He says, because if they can't do that right, they can't do anything right, you know. He said, because that's kind of at the core, he said, of Italian pasta. And he said, if you can't make a good one of them, he says, I doubt you can make anything good. And I love that because when I think about the gospel, what Paul's saying to this church in Galatians, if we get this wrong, we're going to get everything wrong, you know. And so we've got to get that sense of, you know, how are we going to navigate the world, a world that's fluctuating, world that's you know, actually at some level has gone through secularism, in my opinion, and is moving back towards an openness to God. But what God are we opening up to?
Yeah.
So for Paul coming in at this point and says the gospel's core, because this is going to keep us right from wrong at some level. Yeah. This is going to keep us navigating the same things. And you know, our history, the church's history, you know, in the years that you and I have been in ministry, we've seen churches get, you know, overly in bed with one political party, for example. And then the gospel gets fuzzy because we want you to defend our rights. We've seen churches get overly in bed with the whole celebrity culture. And all of a sudden, it's not so much about the gospel, it's about, you know, the Instagram feed or something like that. And it's so easy to get caught up. We'll see this as we study Galatians. There's just a lot of peer pressure going on in this church, and the peer pressure is causing them to move into other things. You know, we've lost friends in ministry who have got distracted from just some of that really basic stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that says this is the gospel stuff that you've got to work with. And I found that really, really challenging. Even as we start this series, that makes sense.
Well, yeah, and I think, as Paul pulls us back to say, hey, we're not going to mess, we're not going to pervert, we're not going to make adjustments, you're not allowed to move into this direction against gospel and how he's presented that and taught them. You know, we've worked for the last year on a document called our values document as a staff, and of course we'll be sharing that at a later date at some point in time as we are now living in it and testing the waters in it. But it's interesting that for us, our values document is so vital because it teaches us how we're going to behave. And so it isn't just about a good job description or a good opportunity or someone's gift that they bring to a staff. It's a values dogma that says, this is how we're going to behave. This is how we're... So technically, you're going to get in trouble when you wander away from the values of how we operate as a team and as a church and as groups of people that serve within the church because of a values document.
Yeah.
And it's not something that we can pick and choose. We have worked diligently to say, this is a core value, this is part of our history, this is part of who we are, and this is a biblical-based piece for us. That's a huge part. That's a huge part for us. And nobody gets to just pick or choose how they feel one day. This is a valuable piece of how we are going to exercise living together as team and as in leadership.
And this is like, you know, our friend John Andrews spoke here last year at Westside. You know, he always talks about values like in this way, which I love. He says, imagine that your organization is on a journey. And, you know, we're trying to get to Toronto, you know, and we're going to go by bus. Well, that's our kind of vision and mission. Yeah. Where are we going? And what are we doing to get there? Whereas our values say, while we're on this journey, what kind of people are we going to be? Are we going to be friends on the bus? Are we going to be welcoming on the bus? Yeah. Are we going to, you know, are we going to serve each other well on the bus? You know, and I love that image of allowing the gospel to seep into not just simply, you know, do we all believe in Jesus or not? But are we living out the gospel, you know, as Jesus followers? Are we carrying those cultures and values? And so now you picked up on something in that when we were discussing our way through this text, that this, of course, you know, Paul uses the language, very common language for Paul, of grace against in there. So there's this sort of thing that happens when we talk about grace, where grace is this you know, unmerited favor, as some people use that language. Or I like to talk about grace in Paul's letters as grace is the gift of God that we receive without regard for our worth or our status, you know. But what can happen, what seems to happen in the kind of translation of text to life is that we sometimes hear grace as basically you can now do whatever you want, right? Which is fascinating because Paul comes along and says, hey, somebody called you in grace, and you're now perverting that. Now, we're only we're 9 verses into this book, right, by week 4. We're 9 verses into this book, so we don't have all the data yet about how Paul's going to unpack what the gospel actually is. But right at the very start, he's saying there's grace, and then there's a way to live that actually messes grace up. There's a way of doing the gospel that stops it being about grace, which kind of starts to say that, well, maybe grace doesn't mean that you can just do whatever you want. Grace actually meets you wherever you are, but calls you into something that does have boundaries and parameters. And you found that kind of, particularly for us as West Side, where grace has been a kind of common theme and will continue to always be one of our core themes, but we're having to define it, aren't we?
The interesting part that I, you know, we'll always see different angles in text, which I love, but I love that Paul, and probably the most important part for us, which is not something as pastors that's easy to do, there are times when we have to just say, stop it. Mm. And I love this part of the text. It's not what I would naturally love to do, but if we are going to lead people, if we are going to lead groups of people, there are things that we have to say, we got to put our hand up and say, this behavior isn't going to help us get to where we got to go. Mm. And those are complicated. And, you know, this week I was talking with somebody about what fruit like looks like in someone's life. And you can point back to significant conversations. You know, Jesus and the rich young man, when he addressed an issue in his life and said, hey, just park it, sell it, and we're going to be good. Come follow. And it says he went away sad. Mm. And when you look at disciples in boats and nets, and I love that story so much, sometimes, you know, Jesus moves the nets and tells them where they should really be fishing, and nets are full. But, you know, move the net, fill the net, and then leave the net. Mm. And I think sometimes this text outlines for us that the gospel says there's movement. Mm. And if there's movement in the wrong direction, we got to speak to that right away.
Yeah.
But the movement says, as a disciple, no matter how we would typically see it or judge it, we would say it's movement. From the person who's never been in to the person that's in for a few years, for the person that's been in church their whole life. You and I, we're required to keep moving.
Yeah.
And we're leading.
Yeah.
But we are you still have to grow in the text and the multiple text and whatever you're teaching. You are teaching material to us that you have to lean into, then you have that text has to respond to you. I always say to you, when we were normally in the building, which we don't like being in empty buildings, that's for sure, is I have to hear you twice. Mm. If I don't, I'm gonna miss it. Mm. But I'm being stretched, you're being stretched in moving in this moment of discipleship. And if we're moving wrong, we have to be corrected. That's a hard spot. You know, prior to COVID-19, only 20% of Canadian churches had anything that was offered online. Mm. Now it's 80%.
Yeah.
Now, there's still, you know, there's product and gospel of how we do that, but there's been a radical movement forward. So churches that are willing to be stretched and leveraged into this, or churches that have great talent, like we are so blessed at Westside with incredible talent that we have been able to make the turn and do it. It has provided for us a new window or an additional window that we wouldn't have had before.
Yeah.
And, you know, even in the middle of using our property, which we're now talking about, we have used our property more now than ever in our history, in our history over the pandemic, whether that's, you know, food trucks, whether that's movies. Mm. We have had our last
drive-in services.
Drive-in services. Yeah. Our last movie, it was 30 and under, and it was a pile of young adults. You know, probably over 350, whatever it was, per cars. It was amazing. Mm. But they were our neighbors. Yeah, they just wanted to come onto our land. Before, we had very limited opportunity to be able to get them connected to even understanding there was a church in their neighborhood. So how we handle these, again, going back to our text, this is why the gospel matters. Mm. Because if we follow Paul's encouragement and say, lock this down, get creative around it, this is going to change lives. This is going to radically change lives. And so leaning into this moment, leaning into the text and valuing things, when we open the doors, when we open fully in a new way of being, the excitement and the journey and who's going to be here, it's going to be a very different flavor. We know that for sure.
As life changes and people, you know, your friends, my friends, our colleagues, you know, whoever we encounter, our neighbors, you know, as the opportunity for the gospel comes along, as they maybe feel they need something, you know, they need to reach out for something more because their way of life lacking the gospel has led them, you know, to a place of despair. You know, we're seeing the challenge on mental health throughout this pandemic is massive. When people do reach out to you, to me, to any of us, like, they need to reach out to something true. This would be where I would stand on that. And if we've messed with the core of what Jesus has called us to be, these people of hope and grace and light that's for everyone, if they reach out and they tune in our channel and instead of grace and love and peace, they just find condemnation and same old, segregation and they're going to go, well, that's not what I need. Like, I need something, like if you're struggling with your mental health, you don't need to connect to something that's going to make that worse. You need to connect to something that has hope. And that's really what Paul's doing in Galatians. His criticism of this church is, you don't look any different than the rest of the world. Yeah. So you're not offering hope. You're not offering something new. Jesus comes and offers us something different. Yeah. And that's why we can't mess with that.
Well, again, short version, it was just a few weeks ago, I was in, like many people, tidying up the garage of extra things that are sitting around. And
don't talk to me about that. I'm packing my house up to move at the moment, so it brings me pain.
I had a portable barbecue from when we RV'd, and I threw it on Kijiji and threw a couple of connections, met a guy down at the old Sick Kids Hospital. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I mean, I'm in my grubbiest of clothes because I'm tidied up, and he looked pretty, actually had a beautiful vest on just like you, and he was a pretty sharp business guy, and we were chatting a bit, and then I asked the question. I said, why are you here? You've driven in from Red Deer. And he said, my wife's, she's in a tough bout right now with stomach cancer, and we're here to walk that through. He was my age. Mm. Man, we didn't care about the barbecue. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, in that open spot, I just said, I tell me your wife's name.
Yeah.
And he said, my wife's name's Susan. And I said, I want to pray. And you know what? We forgot about the mask. I grabbed a hold of him, pulled him in, and two big guys were weeping in a parking lot when we're supposed to be just selling a barbecue. Mm. Because suddenly there's just a moment that you're saying, I got it. Now, God provided that spot. He provided that spot of gospel. I wish that happened every time I jumped on a Kijiji sale. But there's something about a window of somebody who has no church, no connection. Mm. And then at the end of it, I said, listen, we got to stay connected through our online service because he has no place to go. Yeah. And we've continued to go back and forth. And I mean, he's a real fun guy. But there's a process of somebody stepping in as a follower of Jesus. And I can't leave him alone on this.
Yeah.
Now, what's the worst that can happen? He'd take a prayer, move away. Yeah. But you know what? Watching how the gospel works in these environments, whether that's reaching to a lost person, somebody being set straight on a part of their journey, it's what we get to do.
Yeah.
But we don't do it alone. We have the gospel that we get to lean in and follow through with that.
And I always like to say the gospel tells us that everybody matters to God, and therefore to live out the gospel, requires us having those, just living alert, doesn't it? Living alert to the thought that, there's a lot of people need to hear and encounter that. And if they can't hear it and they can't see it, they need to bump into you. They need to bump into me and feel it in that sense.
Yeah, huge.
So, Bobby, thanks for sharing a conversation with us today about this. I think that, for all of us, there's a challenge. And this perhaps would be our challenge to you today, would be to think about, that word pervert the gospel is really huge and kind of ugly and challenging. But what if we just took some time in our own lives to sit down and go, what am I doing in my life that just maybe is just blocking the gospel or just kind of holding it into myself or just maybe not just letting it? I always like talking about the gospel. This is now, I realize, I've talked about it so many times in the past, it's probably inappropriate now. But I think, what if the gospel was as infectious you know, as COVID was, mm-hmm. you know. What if we it leaked out of us, that mm-hmm. people just encountered us and felt that, you know, there's something about that person. Yeah. Now, you know, people aren't going to come up and ask you, hey, what's different than you? But we're laying down the opportunities to not stop people yeah. who are struggling. Like, again, I've said it several times in our talk today, but people are struggling to be hopeful. People are struggling with their mental health. Their finances are terrifying. Job situations are worrying people. Yeah. The impact on children is worrying people. Like, there's not a lack of worry in the world today. Yeah. And then there's this story of a Jesus that just wants to welcome yeah. you and love you. And so for me to sit back, you know, for all of us and sit back and go, what could I just adjust to stop that?
Yeah.
You know, happening, maybe just make it just flow a little easier.
Well, again, as you're going to lead us in the future, and we keep talking about discipleship, it's a major value for us. As a result, it's whatever's distracting. So pervert is a very strong word. What's distracting the movement? Mm. What's distracting the movement of you leaning when you are not being challenged by the own text that you're reading, and I'm not being challenged by the things that God has called me to do? And
yeah.
you know, when we even in the beautiful gift of giving, and we have such a generous church, David, it's amazing. But when we're not even being challenged in that area to say, you know, am I doing what God's want me to do? Is God yeah. asking me for something different in the value of yeah. serving and leading? It's yeah. the distraction that now becomes about us instead of leaning into gospel that yeah. changes those people around yes. us. When we don't have energy for our kids and yeah. our families, there's something in there that's yeah. in the way. And the perversion is taking us away yeah. from where God wants us to be.
Yeah, totally. And you know, and the great thing is, and let's just say this, you know, just in closing, it probably couldn't be easier to break the ice nowadays, you know. So like, here's a little discipline, you know, that several people, you know, are reaching out from Westside to tell us that they're doing this. You know, they get to the end of the Sunday morning service and just take a moment at the end of the service. Was there a song in the online service that, you know, that conversation I had with my friend at work this week? I bet you that song that Heather and the team did would really help them. Well, hey, just click share, you know, fire it through your iMessage to them. Yep. You know, hey, there's a part in that sermon that you know, you don't need to send the whole sermon to your friend and go, you got to watch this 25 minutes. But hey, you know, just watch this at 10 minutes in. And I think you might find it relates to the conversation we had last week.
So
it's so easy to do. You don't need to drag your friend to church and sit hoping that it's a good week to bring them. Yep. You know, you can select a sermon from 3 weeks ago and hey, that's the one for you. Mm. And for me, it's just breaking the ice of just allowing Jesus' love and grace to keep people.
Great point.
So thanks for engaging with our conversation with Bobby and I. Bobby, thanks for talking to me. It's always fun to sit and chat about Jesus and the gospel together. And as we've said every single week, but we keep saying it again, we just pray that where you are right now and all of the opportunities that are in front of you, you would find Jesus' grace and peace in your life.